Some economic hope amid an absence of bad news.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning to you and welcome to the Morning Open. I'm Bob Moon in for Bill Radke. We've got some hopeful numbers out of Germany this morning, an unexpected surge in factory orders. Turns out the euro's plunge is making prices for European manufactured goods more competitive, which tends to ease concerns about the global economy. That seemed to get the attention of investors and the markets at the open, but not so fast. Where's Wall Street now? Actually, the Dow is down now, just a couple of points, a tiny fraction of a percent. The Nasdaq just turned positive by just a hair. The S&P 500 has also just notched back into the green. Let's get a market expert's take on this from Sam Stovall, Chief Investment Strategist at S&P Equity Research, who joins us every Monday at this time. Good morning, Sam.
Good morning, Bob.
So I'm wondering about this early volatility. You know, you've been talking about this market correction for some time now. Did we get that readjustment on Friday with these disappointing jobs numbers, or do you think that the labor market is going to be the focus for investors for a long time to come?
Well, I think the job market, as well as retail sales and any other indication of a global economic recovery, will be on investors' minds. I think certainly they don't want to get caught in another downward draft similar to 2008, in which we did not expect to see the housing situation become as big a problem as it did, and they want to avoid this kind of situation as well.
And it's not just jobs. It was retail sales, and we're getting more questions about global debt now. Were we perhaps a bit too quick to declare a recovery?
Possibly too quick. Our expectation is that the economy will likely be growing at a half speed, meaning half of what it normally does coming out of recession, but still growth nonetheless.
What about the European debt that I mentioned? The euro is down even further this morning against the dollar. What will that do to the global economy?
I think certainly a lot more questions, because global economic growth is a little shade below 4% on an expectations basis for this year, but Europe is only expected to add about 1%, and if they get even weaker, then that could cause the overall growth expectations to be reduced.
S&P equity analyst Sam Stovall, thanks for your insights.
My pleasure.
Speaking of Europe, last week the Hungarian government shocked financial markets with hints that that country might be close to defaulting on its debt. Now Hungary's finance minister says the country can balance its budgets and that any comparisons to the massive debt in Greece are misguided. From Budapest, BBC's Nick Thorpe reports for Marketplace.
The new Hungarian government insists that the previous leadership stepped down with plenty of skeletons left in the closet. But now the new administration has tripped over the bones. The Prime Minister's spokesman, in comments apparently meant purely for domestic consumption, horrified markets last week by comparing Hungary to Greece. Within minutes, the Hungarian currency fell dramatically. Ministers who actually are in charge of economic policy have been struggling to repair the damage. Michael Hughes is a London-based economist.
Well, I think the lesson for the Hungarian government to learn is that comments that were made for a domestic audience in this day and age do travel very quickly.
Even before Greece became a global economic concern, Hungary had received a $25 billion rescue package from the international community to cope with its recession. The weekend panic has had one positive effect. The government has been forced to prepare its plans to fix the economy. In Budapest, I'm the BBC's Nick Thorpe for Marketplace.
You're listening to the Morning Report for Monday, June 7th at marketplace.org. Executives from the British company that almost bought a big chunk of the insurance giant AIG are just about to sit down at a meeting with annoyed shareholders today. Prudential will have to explain why it spent more than $600 million on a deal that never happened. Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson reports.
When you consider that Prudential was willing to pay more than $30 billion for AIG's Asian operations, maybe $600 million isn't such a big deal.
It's insignificant in a totality of what the acquisition would have meant to them.
Carrie Burcham with the law firm Akin Gump advises companies on mergers and acquisitions. She says the price tag results from all the things that had to be done just in case the deal went through, kind of like getting ready for a wedding.
The food's been bought, it's been prepared, and you've bought the flowers, and somebody else bought the flowers, and you know, things are getting done in anticipation for the day.
Except in this case, instead of flowers and cake, it's lawyers, translators, bankers, and accountants preparing for a corporate marriage that fell through. Then there's the breakup fee. Prudential will pay AIG more than $200 million because it backed out of the deal. Chalk that up to lost opportunities for AIG to shop itself around elsewhere, and all the costs it had to incur just in case. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
Yahoo wants to be everyone's friend on Facebook. The company is rolling out new features that will allow its users to view Facebook content on Yahoo sites. Marketplace's Jennifer Collins reports it's Yahoo's latest attempt to revive its business.
Yahoo's been in tech for about as long as many of us have been online. And technology analyst Barry Fox says that's a long time in digital years.
I'm old enough to remember when Yahoo was the main search engine.
Then came Google, and Yahoo's been losing market share ever since. Now, Fox says Yahoo is hoping to link up with Facebook and keep people plugged in that way. You won't have to leave Yahoo to know what your Facebook friends are doing. It'll also allow you to keep track of Yahoo services like the photo sharing site Flickr through your Facebook page. Fox says Yahoo needs to keep its business relevant, and to do that, it needs to keep eyeballs on its pages.
Really, what this is about, it's getting people to look at the advertising that is on these sites.
And for Facebook, this deal connects its nearly 500 million users back to Facebook in yet another way. I'm Jennifer Collins for Marketplace.
Have you ever flipped through the bins at a used record store and seen those promotional CDs labeled "Not for Sale"? Well, apparently the music industry means it. One record label is suing a guy for selling those freebies on eBay. The two sides will argue in a federal appeals court in Seattle today. Marketplace's Amy Scott reports.
Troy Augusto does a healthy business selling rare and collectible CDs on eBay. But when he tried to sell a promo copy of this Lionel Richie song, the record label sued. Universal Music Group lost the case in 2008, but appealed. The nonprofit Electronic Frontier Foundation took up Augusto's case. The group's Fred von Lohmann says the Copyright Act is very clear.
If you own a copy of a book or CD or any other copyrighted work that was lawfully made, you have the right to dispose of that as you see fit.
Universal and its lawyers didn't return calls for comment, but the company argues promotional CDs are the property of the record label and can't be sold. If the label wins, von Lohmann says the outcome could affect book and record stores, video rental shops, libraries, anyone who sells or distributes used media. I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
The Canadian government is spending a whopping $1 billion on security for the G8 and G20 summits of the world's leading economies later this month. Part of that money will finance a giant fence around downtown Toronto, where the G20 will be held. Anyone who wants to get through will have to have ID, as Marketplace's Sean Cole reports.
A couple of weeks ago, some activists held a press conference opposing the G20 and the summit in Toronto, and one of them said this.
The G20 summit in Toronto will create checkpoints in the city.
And I thought, oh, you're exaggerating. It's not going to create checkpoints in the city. And then the police said, no, really, we're going to create checkpoints in the city.
Yes.
Can you show me on this map?
So it's anybody...
Megan Gray is with the Toronto Police G20 planning team. She says people who want to get past the security fence downtown will have to show ID and say where they're going and why. But about 40,000 people who live and work in the area can apply for a special ID to get through faster. And many have.
It's almost like a credit card looking.
Can you use it like a credit card?
No, you can't use it like a credit card. It looks like a credit card.
Gray says the point is to make things easier on Torontonians, but the Canadian Civil Liberties Association wasn't pleased. Applying for the special passes means giving the cops your name and address, and normally they would keep that information for a year. But Gray says they're not doing that in this case.
And the information will be destroyed immediately following the summit.
Totally swear.
Well, it's been put forward, and that's what we'll be doing. That's part of our plan.
I thought this might help put the locals at ease, but Albert Serfati, who runs a printing shop within the perimeter, says that's not what he's worried about.
What I'm more worried about is losing business, because that's what's going to happen. We're all going to take a hit, and everybody I spoke to in the area is not happy about it.
Besides, he says, suppose everybody who lives and works downtown does try to get through the fence with the express pass.
Does that mean there's going to be 300-400 people lining up to get in? Like, who knows? Nobody really knows. All I know, it's a pain.
And this is what I hear over and over again the more I talk with people in Toronto. We are in the dark, they say. Gray says the police are doing their best to keep everyone informed, but even they aren't sure yet how many checkpoints there will be or exactly when the fence will be locked. They do plan to hand out the special passes well before the summit, just in case they need to lock down downtown a week early. In Toronto, I'm Sean Cole for Marketplace.
The name of a mutual fund can influence where people invest, and companies take that into account when they launch a new fund. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer reports.
In Romeo and Juliet, Juliet tells Romeo,
"What's in a name? That which we call a rose by any other name would smell as sweet."
Clearly, Juliet never had to name a mutual fund. The name is crucial. Just ask Izzy DeBellis. He works for a New York marketing firm. DeBellis tells clients, pick a name investors can visualize. He mentions a hedge fund named Cerberus. That's the three-headed dog that guards the gates to Hades in Greek mythology. It's quite an image.
That image is of a dog that is guarding something very valuable, and you do not want to mess with that dog. So they're saying that money with us, we're going to guard it as if we were that, you know, three-headed dog, and we're going to protect it.
Les Funtleiter could have used that advice when he was coming up with a name for his new healthcare fund. It's a cross between a hedge fund and a mutual fund. Funtleiter works for the financial services firm Miller Tabak. He'll manage the money. He decided to try naming the fund himself.
It was pretty much me coming up with ideas and using a thesaurus.
Funtleiter bounced names off of colleagues, starting with famous explorers and ships.
Then we went through the classical languages, Greek and Latin and Italian. There were some words there, but most people wouldn't really understand what we were doing.
Then Funtleiter thought, I've got it. We'll name the fund Aperture. You know, like the adjustable opening in a camera. Funtleiter wanted investors to think about new openings, new opportunities. I decided to run that name by some downtown Washington office workers.
I think of playing a woodwind instrument.
Almost like an appendage, a part of something.
That was Aaron Minces and Sharon Gassaway Fontaine. And here's what Kara Elkins thinks about the word aperture.
Like a hole opening.
Hey, great. Throw your money down a hole while playing the clarinet. Not exactly what Les Funtleiter had in mind. Funtleiter's colleagues didn't like the name either. So he settled on this, the Miller Tabak Healthcare Transformation Fund. Boring, but to the point. We'll see what investors think. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
We're about to buy hook, line, and all the rest into Apple's latest not-so-mysterious product announcement. The company is welcoming programmers to its annual Worldwide Developers Conference near its headquarters in California. And as usual, the week kicks off with a keynote from CEO Steve Jobs, which usually means some kind of market-jolting development. Marketplace's Jeff Horwich is with me now. Hey, Jeff.
Good morning, Bob.
So what's going to blow everybody's hair back this year?
So that's the thing. It was probably supposed to be the new iPhone 4. Rumors have it maybe being called the iPhone HD. I guess we'll get to find out what they actually call it. But you might have heard about this Apple employee who lost a prototype back in March while the blog Gizmodo took it apart for the rest of the internet. Here's some of the new stuff. It's got cameras on both sides, a camera flash. It's thinner, bigger battery. And now that's all worthy of polite applause when Steve Jobs holds it up. But unless Apple quickly came up with a fresh secret to roll out, the leak kind of stole the fireworks.
Well, without the surprise of a new iPhone, is there any big news to come out of this conference then?
Well, the meeting should actually be full of important developments, according to ZDNet editor Larry Dignan.
While the techies might be a little disappointing because they feel like they know everything, business-wise, the fun's just starting.
He says Apple's new iPhone software is a bigger deal than the hardware. It'll add functions like multitasking that users have been asking for. We can also expect Apple to talk about how it'll start incorporating ads into applications for the iPhone and iPad, which is really important news if you care about how Apple makes money.
That's right. And if you care, I'm sure there's a live feed somewhere out there on the Internet. Marketplace's Jeff Horwich, thank you.
You're welcome, Bob.
And finally this morning, a fond farewell to one of the pioneers of the business we call radio. Hyman Brown has died in New York at the age of 99. He created some of the most memorable shows in the heyday of radio. Now, you might consider that a creaky old medium. And actually, that's exactly what Brown had in mind back in the 1940s, a creaky old storytelling device.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum. This is your host to welcome you through the squeaking door. Draw up a tombstone and sit down. Don't mind the fact that we've carved your name on it.
What's the picture in your mind right now? Hyman Brown believed that television had nothing on radio because there's really no limit to what you can see on the radio. The New York Times quotes him as saying, "Creak the door open and visually your head begins to go. The magic word is imagination." Whatever's on your mind, we're always glad to hear it at marketplace.org. I'm Bob Moon in Los Angeles, and this is the Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
"What is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?"
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.